The Bowl Foundation is the German Green Party's outreach here to the United States and around the world. They're a think tank. The import of this is that we're going to hear about the German transition process to what should be a 21st century energy policy for the entire world. But I wanted to just an example of the work that the Bold Foundation is doing. Just a week or so ago, I attended a congressional briefing on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. that was co-sponsored by U.S. Senators Olympia Snowe and Tom Carper on the offshore wind development that's going on in Bremen and Bremenhaven, Germany, and how this is putting advancing the alternative wind energy project and putting thousands of people back to work in the process as we begin to make the shift. The demonstration for the whole world is occurring right now in Germany. So we're looking very much forward to that presentation. Then we're going to hear from Akiko Yoshida, who was, many of you saw her yesterday as the plenary speaker, but if you missed that, she is Friends of the Earth Japan, and in the position right now of advocating for Japan's shift to a 21st century energy policy focused on renewables. And the whole process right now is that only two of the 50 remaining reactors in Japan are currently operational, and there is a big fight to keep them shut down. And as I understand the most recent news, even the Oi reactor may be closed soon because of the discovery of earthquake faults right under the plant. And then we'll hear again from Dr. Arjun Makajani with the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research on how we're going to make that transition to a nuclear-free, carbon-free energy policy here in the United States.
Thank you very much for the kind introduction, Paul. Good to see so many of you. And thank you for inviting and including me. I brought a slideshow, and you can see it here, a little cut off. Is it? Can we perfectionize it a little bit? And so it's not my first time in Chicago. I was here last year, but I also was here 20 years ago. 20 years ago, I was an exchange student in my junior year in high school, and I stayed with a family in Decatur, Illinois. So I like the Midwest. I've come here back and forth. And actually, that 20 years ago, that was a time I was 17, and there was a movie out in the movies. It's called Kindergarten Cop with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it was for the first time that I realized that there are German words in the English language that are being used as English words, like kindergarten, which has a German origin, or Schadenfreude is one that I heard of, or Leitmotiv, or others. And I think there's one more coming to it, and that is the word Energiewende. Energy transition, loosely translated, as you see here. So what I would like to do is share with you what's happening over in Germany on the nuclear piece. I wanted to share some of the nuclear piece, but more on the renewable side. I think what's happening in terms of renewable energies, in particular photovoltaics, solar PV, is dramatic, and it's worthwhile to take a closer look at that. And our aim, the aim of the Heinrich Böll Foundation, is to make this story accessible for the international audience, to provide an English overview. Thank you very much. So quickly, the Böll Foundation, as Paul mentioned, a Green Party affiliated with the German Green Party, with roughly 30 offices around the world. This one in Washington, especially for transatlantic relations on energy issues, but also other green issues like foreign and security policy, on global...
Unidirectional. If you point it straight toward your mouth and speak this way.
So I should speak this way and not look at the people?
Here. Just get it. Well, now you got the. There you go. Okay.
Like that. Can you hear me now? Yes? Okay, good. I'll try to stay like this. I need a longer arm, though. Okay, here we go. On the nuclear piece. You all know that Germany has a long tradition, the anti-nuclear power movement has a long tradition in Germany. It goes way back into the 70s. I was a little kid then. I don't know anything about that. But this is a map about Germany. You see a lot of circles there, and those circles are nuclear power plants in Germany and in neighboring countries. And the darker part inside of that circle, that is a 30-kilometer radius around the nuclear power plant. That is the evacuation zone I was told that was announced for Fukushima. The wider circle around that, the light red, that's an 80-kilometer radius. And that was recommended by the American, by the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Agency, for American citizens to stay away from Fukushima. So we just drew this map, circled around the nuclear power plants in Germany. And as you can see, these circles cover quite a lot of the country. In fact, the wider circle covers basically half of all German population. 40 million of all 80 million people live close to 80 kilometers or closer to a nuclear power plant in Germany. And after Fukushima, people realized, you know, that's quite close. That's a high density of nuclear reactors in a country like Germany. And you can also see neighboring countries. There are some very old, some risky reactors there in the Czech Republic, that is Temelin, in France, in Switzerland. So Germany, as you all know, is highly dense populated, very densely populated. We are basically a country half the size of Texas, but there's 80 million people living in there. So there's a high awareness of the risk of nuclear power. If something is happening, then that would have a dramatic economic impact, not to mention all the other impacts. And I think that really became clear for Germans after Fukushima. How do the Germans plan this nuclear phase out? Some of you probably know that the recent decision of the government of Angela Merkel was not something very new. But there was a lot of policy work before, and actually in the year 2000, the government introduced a first nuclear phase out. It was actually an agreement between the government and the nuclear utilities. These nuclear utilities signed up an agreement to say, we're going to shut down all the reactors in Germany over a certain time of year, over certain years. And here you see a timeline of from the year starting 2000 to the year 2023, with all the nuclear capacity being online. On the very left hand, you can see we basically started off with the nuclear capacity of 22,000 megawatts. So that was 20 reactors. And over the time, by the year 2011, before Fukushima, two reactors were already shut down, Stade and Obrigheim, based on that existing law of the old red-green government. And after Fukushima, the then center-right coalition with the Conservative Party and the Libertarian Party and Chancellor Angela Merkel, and this center-right coalition is more pro-nuclear than the center-left with the Green Party, of course, they decided to shut down 8 reactors immediately after Fukushima. So you see a big drop there, going down by 8 gigawatts, and they assigned for each of the remaining 9 reactors a fixed shutdown date. So in the law it's now written when each of these reactors will be shut down, you can see the last one will be December 31st, 2022. That's the date when the 3 last reactors in Germany are scheduled to be shut down. Now, when you talk about the energy transition, the Energiewende, and you know, as a German living in the United States, I read a lot about the English newspapers or American newspapers and the media. There's a strong focus about the nuclear piece and the renewable piece in the electricity sector. However, this energy transition with the aim to decarbonize the economy, that's across many sectors. It's in the electricity sector, but it's also transportation and housing. It's in the heat sector. And so This is an overview. This is basically the energy transition in a nutshell with all the different targets the government has set for different sectors. So, for example, in power consumption, there's the target to ramp up renewables to 80% at least by the year 2050. So 80% of all electricity should come from renewables by 2050. That is a... And you should remember, this is the conservative government. All the opposition parties are saying this is too slow, we can go to 100% and we can do it earlier. Yeah. And I think this, all these targets that are implemented partially in ordinances or in laws, all these targets provide a high investment certainty for the economy, for utilities. They basically know, if you look at the lowest row there, that is the targets for greenhouse gases. So Germany aims to cut greenhouse gas emissions at least by 80% by mid-century. If you know that as an investor and you think about investing in a new coal plant, you have to calculate. You have to do your math if it's really worthwhile to invest something now that on the way might be forced to shut down, because there's a broad political consensus in Germany to do this. And I think this high investment certainty is really important in the German story. I'm raising it up. It's getting better again? Good. Thank you. Now, before I worked with the foundation in Washington, I was an advisor for the Green Party in the national parliament, in the Bundestag. So I worked a lot on the cap and trade bill and the nuclear phase out and the Renewable Energy Act. And at the year 2000, that's when I started, but it's a coincidence that there were some great movements afterwards. But in the year 2000, we basically introduced this Renewable Energy Act, which I think is a flagship policy for Germany and has been copied many times around the world. And at that time, renewables had a share of 5% in Germany. And it was mostly old hydropower. As you can see, the lower blue line, that is all hydropower. And we were saying, well, we want to grow renewables to 7.5% or maybe 10%. And the feedback we got was, well, that is too ambitious, that is too fast, renewables are not reliable enough, that is too expensive to go that way. And actually, these targets were easily surpassed. The government always had to correct its targets and upgrade them to higher numbers. And as you can see here, there was a strong growth after the year 2000 in onshore wind, that is the light blue going up. Then around the year 2004, after a new amendment to this policy, there was strong growth in biomass and bio-waste electricity. And then most recently, and that is on the right upper side, there's strong growth in photovoltaic. And today, photovoltaic is providing 5% of electricity per year in the German electricity mix, something that I thought a couple of years ago was way too ambitious. And a side note, on the very left, there's a little box that says original feed-in tariff. So this original energy policy was implemented in the year 1990, back then again by a conservative government. It was actually farmers in Bavaria that wanted to sell their hydropower electricity to the grid, and they were tired of negotiating with the utility that did not want to buy that power, and they asked the conservative government, please give us a policy, a mechanism that we don't have to negotiate with these guys anymore, but we can just sell. And so this was very important. The architecture was implemented in 20 years ago, in 1990, conservative government, and then a center-left government upgraded that policy. And how does that work? I don't know how many of you are familiar with the feed-in tariff, but it basically has two main elements that make it so successful. First of all, if you're investing in a windmill, let's say that, when you connect to the grid, you know for sure that for the next 20 years, for each kilowatt hour you feed into the grid, you get a fixed return, a fixed payment back for that electricity hour. The second one is maybe even more important. The second one is that you have guaranteed grid access. That means you don't have to negotiate with the utility, but the utility has to buy your power. They have to connect you to the grid, and they have to give you priority. They can't block you and say, well, our grid is overloaded with coal power or nuclear power. They have to buy your power. If they don't buy it, they have to compensate you, so there's some details that I can't get into right now. But basically, this combination of a safe financial return and the guaranteed grid access, that provides a high investment certainty for renewable energy projects in Germany. So banks in Germany, if you tell them, I have this piece of land and I want to build windmills or biogas or want to put solar panels on my roof, banks know this is a very safe investment and they give you the money at very good conditions. It's very easy to do that in Germany. And it's remarkable. I think this was only seen later on, that this policy actually opened up the production of energy. It expanded that. So not only utilities anymore produce electricity, but regular citizens do. And how does it look today? This is a pie chart of the ownership of these renewable energy projects. So there's right now 53 gigawatts, or that's the number for 2010, 53 gigawatts of installed renewable energy technologies in Germany. And we have four big traditional utilities. They're called the Big Four. They run coal power and they run nuclear power. These Big Four utilities have a tiny share in all the renewable energy projects. It's here at 6.5%. 6.5% of all new renewable energy projects come from the old guys. More than 90% come from new players, from new investors. And the interesting part about Germany, and I think that is unique in international comparison, a little similar with Denmark, that half of all these investments come from private citizens, comes from farmers, comes from people getting together in a cooperative, to pool their money and to put solar PV on the town hall or put a wind farm out on the in front of the village. And that is really a striking difference, for example, to the developments that I observe here in this country, where a lot of the policies, I would say all of the policies, are geared towards large-scale investors, and they're not geared to private people going into this. Yeah. There are some. I use these slides from a new website that we just published this week. The website is called www.energytransition.de. I'm going to show it later on again, and I just wanted to show you some of the nice graphs. This is a graph, for example, on the jobs. You can see the black column. Those are the jobs we have in Germany in coal mining, in the coal electricity, nuclear electricity. That's roughly 180,000 jobs, and that hardly changes. But we have a strong additional new jobs in the whole renewable energy sector. More than 380,000 people by now work in this sector, and the numbers are expected to grow even further. And it shows that renewable energies create more jobs than conventional energy does. And a lot of these jobs are local jobs. They are being created in these communities, and they cannot be exported. So it's really helpful also for a healthy economy. And democracy was mentioned here. Another graph, this one is on the question of, well, how do you decarbonize your economy without paying too much? You know, does it cost us to get rid of coal? Renewable energies are expensive, so what does it do to GDP? Well, in the German case, you can make a very good case to say, actually, this was a very path with prosperity. Since 1991, the GDP in Germany grew by 27%, but at the same time, emissions declined by 24%. So we have a growing economy but declining emissions, and I think that's a good case for a green economy. And I want to show you a couple of slides on solar power, which is, I think, the remarkable story in Germany. And I have a map later on, but you have to imagine that Germany is about as sunny as the state of Alaska. Yeah? So we do not have a lot of... We do have sun days, but the radiation is not that strong. It's not the best country to showcase how solar really works. But still they managed to do, it seems. By now, Germany has installed 30 gigawatts of solar power, of solar PV. A lot of that is decentralized, so it's on rooftops. There are also some on green fields, but there's a lot of this stuff is on rooftops. And we are only learning now to understand what does that do to the energy system in general in Germany. And this is a graph that shows basically one day from midnight to midnight again. And the upper gray curve, that is the power demand. That is all the electricity that is being used during the day. And it's a typical curve that peaks over noon and then goes back down again at night when the factories slow down. When in Germany, when we do have a sunny day and the sun shines, all these solar panels produce electricity. So what you will see is that when the sun rises until 12 and 1, we have a very high peak of solar power production. And in this case, the example was chosen of 22 gigawatts of solar power. That was a day in May. And just to give you a perspective, 22 gigawatts of solar equals the amount of 20 large coal power plants or 20 nuclear power plants. That is as much power the Germans get today when the sun is shining. And you know, this is really hurting the business of traditional utilities. That's the time when they can't sell their own power and they have to reduce the output of their own power plants. This is why they get mad at solar PV, and this is why they want to stop any more investments in solar, because it means they have to take down even further their own power plants. How does this compare to other countries? And how does this compare to the grid in general? This is maybe a complicated slide. I'm using these for the first time, so please forgive me. I'm still trying to frame it in the right way. But in this slide, we compare basically the solar installations in Germany, in Italy, in Spain, and the United States. And Italy is also known to be a front runner on solar, Spain also a little bit. US so far is not to be known a front runner. How do these different countries compare? Well, you can, if we take it just for the easy comparison, Germany and the United States, on the one hand, you can see that Germany has installed 30 gigawatts of solar power. The US has installed 4 gigawatts of solar power. So in the absolute amount, that ratio is something like 7 to 1. Germany has about 7 times more solar power installed than the United States. If you compare that to how much electricity is in the grid in total, then you can see that Germany has basically could power half of its electricity needs with the solar that is installed in Germany, 50%. The United States, however, the 4 gigawatts are so small they would only cover 0.5% of the electricity demand here in this country. So that gives you a better understanding of the proportion, how big things are in Germany, and how tiny solar is still in the United States, and how big of a potential there is in the United States. And there are some smart people doing comparisons between Germany and the United States. A lot of the renewable energy experts are from the US looking to Germany and trying to crunch numbers and compare it to the US. And this is some work that is being done by the Lawrence, by the University of Berkeley. I think it's called the Lawrence Lab. Yes. And this is comparing costs. How expensive is it to install a solar panel in Germany, and how expensive is it to do that in the United States? And basically their result was it costs twice as much to install the same solar panel in the United States than in Germany. And the reason for that is not the hardware. The hardware is all the blue stuff on the bottom, the panel, the inverter, and other electronic pieces. That is roughly the same in Germany and the United States. But where Germany is much cheaper is in terms of the labor cost, the supply chain, permitting, overhead costs, profits. In all these categories, the German market is much more mature and has learned to become much more effective. So this also is an indicator for the point that for a country like the United States, there is not really time to wait for cheaper solar, because the technology is already cheap. What is expensive is to get the market going, to reduce the cost in the market, to, for example, you know, have the technicians that they know what they're doing, to scale up the markets so there's it gets more common. And if you live as a German abroad and you know those things from the German discussion, but you read international newspapers, it's quite amazing the gossip, so to say, about the German story and what's all happening there. You read about the blackouts and skyrocketing energy costs, rising emissions, and a lot of these issues. Or I realize that there's a lot of attention on Germany because the traditional industry or the traditional energy, fossil fuel and nuclear industry, they are somewhat afraid that this German story works. Because if it works in Germany, then likely it can be done anywhere. Because Germany is a highly industrialized country. If you can run a country like Germany without nuclear power and even without coal power, that should be possible anywhere. So there's a lot of PR work against the German story, and we see it as our role as the Böll Foundation to help provide more transparency, to give more information. And even though, I'm with the Green Party, we have right now a center-right government with Chancellor Merkel, she's a conservative, I think they are not doing a great job on the energy transition right now, but I still think in general it's of course a good policy and they are moving things forward. And I brought a couple of these copies here of this little book, The Myth and Facts. It's available on our website and I still have some copies here. And now I want to, in my last couple of minutes, I want to draw it back to the United States. And let me just say that I think each country needs to do its own energy transition. I can tell you about the German story, but you can't implement things one-to-one, and countries and societies have to find their own way. But I want to highlight a couple of things that I think are worthwhile to mention. And this one is on electricity prices. So in Germany, we do have high electricity prices. I would pay something like 30 US cents or even more for 1 kilowatt hour in Germany, and that is relatively expensive. I think California might be getting in the same direction, but in most places in the United States, the price of 1 kilowatt hour is around 10 cents or 11 cents, some pay even less. But the Germans don't really have a high energy bill. It depends on how much you use, right? You can have high prices, but you can still have low cost if you don't use as much. So this is a small comparison between Germany and some of the US states. And I just pick, let's say I pick Iowa. Iowa, people in Iowa roughly use 900 kilowatt hours per month of electricity. They pay roughly 10.5 US cents. So per month, they pay $93 for electricity needs on average. In Germany, the Germans pay roughly $108 per month. So they pay more than in Iowa, but they have much higher prices. They only use 320 kilowatt hours. And if you look at states like Alabama, again, they have much cheaper electricity rates than Germany, but they use much more. So people in Alabama pay $140 per month for their electricity needs. Germans pay $108. So you always have to put these numbers in comparison. And I thought I had more US-German things, but let me give you 5 takeaways of the German energy transition. I think foremost, it is ambitious projects. It is an ambitious project, but it's feasible and it's doable. Second, you have to realize in Germany it is driven by cooperatives, it's driven by citizens and by small investors. It's really a bottom-up push that is happening over there. It's not asking the big utilities, please invest in renewable energies. That is not happening. Third, the energy transition provides jobs and income for communities, and it also provides a competitive advantage for the German industry. A lot of these jobs and a lot of these technologies that are being developed, they offer new opportunities for very traditional industries. So for example, the steel industry is happy about many windmills in Germany because they provide all the resources. Shipyard regions, often in economic decline, they are becoming the new offshore wind hubs. So they get a new perspective for economic development. Farmers today are investing heavily in renewable energies. So these good developments reach a lot of different industrial sectors. Fourth, I haven't really dug into that, but I want to make it very clear, especially for this community, fighting climate change and phasing out nuclear power can be two sides of the same coin. Germany is phasing out nuclear power and at the same time is reducing its greenhouse gas emissions. That is not a contradiction. And last but not least, this energy transition is affordable for Germany. I think it even pays off, but let's keep it simple, it's affordable. If it's affordable for Germany, it is even more so for many other countries, because many other countries have much better resources when it comes to solar. And these technologies are much cheaper now than 10 years ago when Germany started. So this is a snapshot of the United States and Germany. Some of you have probably have seen it. On the right-hand side, you see a blue box. That is Germany and the sunshine in Germany. On the bottom left is the blue box of Alaska. Germany is as sunny as Alaska. If you look at the United States, if you look at the Midwest or Chicago, this area has at least 40% better solar resources than Germany. If you look to California, Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, out of one solar panel, you get twice the amount of electricity up there. It's much easier, it's much less costly over there. This is the website, the German Energy Transition, www.energytransition.de. And it tells the story of Germany much better than I just did, believe me. Take a look at it, and thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Arnold. Our next presenter...
Are you going to take any questions?
We'll be taking questions at the end of the three presentations. Our next presenter will be Akiko Yoshida.
Now I'd like to share you about Japan's energy policy after Fukushima accident, especially about the national discussion on revision of an energy policy and the new nuclear policy, nuclear regulation. After the disaster, in March last year, we have built up new network against nuclear energy, a network for nuclear phase-out and energy shift. In this network, called E-Shift, there were many anti-nukes groups, as well as environmental protection groups like FOE Japan, WWF, and also some youth groups and consumer groups, so very variable network. Such network was first founded after Fukushima. Now there are around 60 groups in this network and more than 200 people on the mailing list. We have once a month meetings and sharing information and discussing about activities and policies against the governmental policy. This is the website of that. And this is the time schedule of Japanese government's revision of energy policy. In June last year, the former Prime Minister Kan has announced that we have to revise the energy policy. The energy plan before the Fukushima was so very pro-nuclear. It was so Japanese government was targeted to increase the rate of nuclear energy to 50% by 2030. It contains to build 14 new reactors by 2030. So it was not realistic anymore. And there are three processes regarding to this energy policy revision. Basic energy plan, revision of basic energy plan, revision of nuclear energy policy, and revision of climate policy. In each council, the draft plan was discussed and was announced by the National Policy Unit, a draft for new energy policy. They proposed three options for national discussion in the end of June. The first was zero scenario, nuclear phase out by 2030. The second was 15 scenario to keep nuclear energy 15% at the time of 2030. The other was 20 to 25 scenario to keep nuclear energy. And this new zero scenario, nuclear phase out scenario, was bounded with the phase out of reprocessing policy. And in summer and August, there was a national discussion. So the way of national discussion was so, first information service on website and public comments and public hearings in 11 cities, only 11, but also including Fukushima. And deliberative opinion research and cooperation with non-governmental meetings. We, NGOs and citizens groups, has discussed about activities for this national discussion with the network of eShift, what I have introduced you just before. We first called for sending public comments, as much public comments as ever before. This is the character of public comments we used to call to the public. We also made a website to convey our message to send their comments. We held events and seminars and has collected public comments on big demonstrations or actions in front of the Prime Minister's house. We also called for voluntary meetings of citizens groups. We called government officials to our voluntary meetings, and so such meetings were in more than 20 cities. We FOA Japan also hosted some meetings in Tokyo and in Fukushima, especially in Fukushima, to convey their direct voices of affected people in Fukushima. The result was, to the public comments, there were more than 89,000 comments. And the point was, these 89,000 comments were each very various. There was only a few copies. Each person has written by yourself very various comments. And 87% of that supported nuclear phase out, zero scenario. And even 78% supported immediate phase out. That was really amazing. That could say the success of citizens' movement. And also the demonstrations in front of the Prime Minister's house was considered. The result of this national discussion was so concluded that more than half of the nation, half of the Japanese citizens are for nuclear phase out. With that result, the Japanese government has announced this new energy policy, innovative strategy for energy and environment, on 14th September. It contains this word, this sentence: we will devote all policy resources to achieving zero nuclear power generation in the 2030s. Yes. Three principles are so. First, no new or additional construction of nuclear reactors. Second, the strict application of the 40-year limit to the operation of existing reactors. Third, and only reactors that were confirmed to be safe by the Nuclear Regulatory Authority will be allowed to be reactivated. But this strategy obtained also contradiction in itself. It contains the continuation of nuclear fuel cycle policy, reprocessing policy. Because the Aomori prefecture is against the acceptance of waste of final disposal. And the next day, the Minister of Industry, Yukio Edano, has announced that three power plants under construction are outside of the principle. So the outside of this principle. So this is the nuclear fuel reprocessing policy. We know that this policy is not succeeded. It's always stopping. Monju and Rokkasho, they are stopping yet. And this is the Oma nuclear power plants under construction. This is now 30% constructed. But this is the map around these Oma nuclear power plants. In the 30-kilometer radius around this PowerPoint, around this plant, is Hakodate City, a very big city in the Hokkaido side. But to the Hokkaido side, to this Hakodate city, nothing was informed about this power plant and construction and about the danger of this reprocessing of these power plants. And this is the site of this Oma nuclear power plants. There is a person who haven't sell their ground to this company. She is still living here in this site. The green area is that this is still private ground. So the company has to change its plan, previous plan, so the construction is delayed many years. Yeah. And this is the relationship between government and nuclear regulation authority. The minister of METI, Yukio Edano, says it is up to government to decide. It is not up to government to decide whether reactor restarts after that nuclear regulation authority has been set up. But the head of nuclear regulatory authority, Shunichi Tanaka, says we are responsible only for confirming whether safety standards are met from a scientific and technological standpoint. He said that the government decides. So the nuclear regulation policy was also revised after Fukushima. Before, it was very problematic that the regulation agency and nuclear was in the government who was supported nuclear policy. So this nuclear regulation authority was founded like NRC in the US, the independent authority. But is this nuclear regulatory authority actually independent? This nuclear regulatory authority has five members, but these five members are not approved by the National Diet, which is actually needed. Because many of the Diet members, as well as citizens and citizens groups, were against these five persons. Because the chairman, Shunichi Tanaka, was a key member of a government panel promoting nuclear energy and headed government research on the technology. And he was also against compensation for those who evacuated on their own. He said it doesn't need to pay for voluntary evacuees. And the other persons were also from nuclear industry and related organizations. So who can say that this is really independent from nuclear industry and the old system? The nuclear regulatory agency is now to announce guidelines for the nuclear disaster prevention. But it is also problematical because this is the simulation of the authority in November. But it shows only very high radiation dose by the accident, 100 millisieverts in 7 days. In some cases, this evacuation area is more than 30 kilometers. And this is OE reactors, which are now online, two reactors. And it is found that under these OE nuclear power plants, there is an active fault, but the authority and the government has not stopped these two reactors and are going to have another research. But we urge the government to stop immediately these reactors. And these are faults around Fukui Prefecture. Around all nuclear power plants in Japan, there are many faults. And this is energy supply in Japan. Without nuclear power, we have enough energy supply with other resources. And that is, we know that because this summer we only had two reactors online. But how is going after that, this, after the innovative strategy for energy and the environment? We don't know yet. With this strategy, Japanese government is to determine the new strategic energy plan for Japan, but the schedule is delayed because some committee members are against this nuclear phase-out policy. Some people from industry is still saying that we don't have to abandon nuclear energy. And now we have election in 2 weeks, so it's very important which policy we citizens decide, choose. And also in 2 weeks, on 15th and 16th December, we have a big conference on nuclear phase-out and nuclear regulation. Nuclear free now. This is broadcasted both in Japanese and in English. You can check it up and can see the use streaming also in English. You can also have some further information on our website, FOE Japan. Not very much, but something in English. This picture is on the 5th of May, on which all nuclear power plants were shut down. So we have to fight together for nuclear-free Japan and for the world, for the children. Thank you very much.